to the Science Witch Podcast, where we explore how science and witchcraft intersect, interact, and affirm one another. I am your host, Angel, and this is our offering for Samhain and 79th episode. For this year's episode, Inku and I spoke with fellow podcaster and witch, Seba, host of the Southern Fried Witch Podcast, about how she observes this Sabbath and how to compost that rot of the previous year into the nutrients to sustain us in the coming turn of the wheel. I'm a huge fan of Seba's podcast, and there is something comforting and affirming to listen to her charming southern drawl and lyrical alliteration about her life as a witch, grandmother, farmer, and survivor. This episode gets personal, and so we do want to give a content warning about mentions of domestic abuse and relationship violence. So listeners, please take care if this is a sensitive topic for you. We do not dwell on the past, however, as Seba has an infectious resilience that carries through her words and our conversations. As a PhD professor of English, she weaves in examples of classical literature and poetic digressions to artfully describe her experience and expound wisdom on her croning era. In this convo for our Samhain season, we discuss the connection to the land, what it is to be a southern witch and be haunted, and how to use our witchcraft to break generational curses, and even a little bit about trans trees. Just a quick note about editing this episode. Towards the end, there is a shrill sound in the background of Inku's recording, and that is actually crickets that were singing outside while he was recording. The audio quality is still fair, but if you notice that bit of a tinny sound to his voice, that's why. So, without further ado, I bring you our Samhain special with Seba, the Southern Fried Witch. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Science Witch Podcast. Today we have our special Samhain episode to celebrate the end of the witch's year. And with us, we have fellow podcaster and friend of our podcast, Seba, the Southern Fried Witch. So, Seba, as we like to do whenever we begin a podcast episode, will you please introduce yourself to our listeners who may be new to your work?
Sure. Okay. I live in Alabama. I'm a native Alabamian. I'm also a professor of philosophy and literature. I'm, for lack of a better word, a farmer, but we're looking at a way to change that word. I'm a writer, I'm a podcaster, and most importantly, I am a witch.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually introduced to your podcast by the ladies at That Witch Life. And since then, me and Inku have gotten to meet you in person. I think we've been on your podcast. I wasn't sure if we cross-platformed that onto our podcast, but we've definitely mentioned you and your work. And yeah, I am also a listener as well. So, and a Patreon supporter of you. So we're both fans of your work. And thank you for coming on and being our guest for the Samhain episode. I know that you've talked about Samhain being a very important Sabbath for you as well. So yeah, I guess to start out with, there was a question that Inku came up with that I really wanted to open up the podcast with. So
yeah, go for it.
So my initial question was just about the South. You are the Southern Fried Witch. I'm also a bit of a Southern Fried Witch. Angel has moved on to more rainy pastures in the Pacific Northwest. So How do you take that? How does our region, maybe especially for our friends and magical family in other parts of the country and other parts of the world, what is the South to you? How is it part of your magic?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I do know we all have Southern roots. For me, I know I told both of you a long time ago. I think it was sitting on my land when I told you that somebody has to stay. And I chose to stay. It's not that I didn't have opportunities, but I chose to stay. And the reason is because my ancestors, who were both Cherokee and Irish Celt, they lived and died here. And this particular land really resonates with me because of my ancestral veneration. But it also, I just feel it is a very magical, very haunted, very complicated place.
Oh,
And
we are so haunted. Oh my God. Yes.
right. And I've learned all of my life. I did it from a child with the training I had as a child. I've worked with these land spirits and I've become part of them. And there is a, the word covenant comes to mind. I think about coven all the time, but the word covenant, I forged a covenant with this red clay a long time ago. And so I would like to defend her. And I'm thinking of the land and the land spirits and the Haynes and the pine trees. I would like to defend her from so many forces and institutions that are trying to rip away her magic.
Yes.
I am a native Alabamian, but I'm also a native witch. And I'll be damned if I'm going to let anyone have this. So I guess in a weird sideways Dr. Seuss way, I speak for the trees. The trees, so I don't know if that makes any sense, but that covenant ran a little too deep when I hate the word bought or owned, but you know how the government is. When I made this covenant with my land that I wouldn't leave, and here I shall reside and tell the stories about the witchcraft that does exist in the deep south. Our voices may be muted, but we're here. So.
Yes, I resonate a lot with so much of what you said. And yeah, at least for me, it's such a tense dichotomy of recognizing that the land that I'm in relationship with is ill-gotten and is steeped in blood and is steeped in genocide. And at the same time, it's the land that I am stewarding and in relationship with, and that I just love at the same time. It's not easy.
No, it's not. And I'm sorry, go ahead, Angel.
Well, I was just going to say, as the southerner that left, I find that some days I do miss the chance to own land, 'cause, or at least in the sense that it's property that I would be stewarding, 'cause the choice to leave made it to where it's financially non-viable for me to have my own house or land or anything, which sucks because I love gardening and I would love to be able to actually steward a piece of land. And it's a lot more expensive for sure. The calculation I had to make was how much I wanted to actually be able to live in a way that I don't have to fear being openly queer or, and I know both of you have had consequences, and have to keep certain compartmentalization, which is something a lot of people who live in more conservative areas have to make, that, that calculation as to where you want to put your energy in and like how dangerous it is for you to be there. But it's still very important that there are people that are queer, that are witches in places like this, because it makes it safer for the people that are not able to leave, that are part of those communities. So, I just want to say, as like somebody who did leave, I find it's still very important to honor and I have a lot of respect for the people who stayed and are witchy and witchifying these red states.
Yeah, and I'm a little queer myself. I was not able to say that out loud until the last 2 years, but I'm allowed to say that now. I'm now divorced and becoming my most authentic self.
You.
But yes, finally. But I hear a lot from my witch friends who did leave the South, like a resonant, like a little residual, I don't want to call it guilt, survivor's guilt almost, that I don't think my friends ought to feel. I think some of us were called to stay and some of us were called to go and echo back, and keep those connections and hold space for us that are still here that I don't think we'd be okay without you. So I wanted to say that.
And it's funny because I find a lot of people out here in the Pacific Northwest like to pretend they're from the South when in fact it's just a character for them. That really annoys me. I was at a mushroom festival and there was one of the presenters there who was presenting herself as a chef from Louisiana, and she was saying how she was Creole. And so I was like, oh, where are you from? And so she kind of looks at me and she just says, the bayou. And I was like, oh, where in the bayou? And then
That's
she
very
just
specific.
keeps saying the bayou. And I was just like, okay, there's a lot of bayous in Louisiana. And then finally she sat down and she was like, look, this is just a character I'm playing. And I was just like, oh, all right, well. She's like, I do
Whoa,
have
that's.
family in Shreveport, but I'm not
Oh.
from there. I have never really been to Louisiana. And so I was just kind of like, well, this makes this not as enjoyable as I want. Like I thought was that this was authentic, and that's not the first time I've experienced that, is like people in other places, in some ways, fetishize the South, especially up here in the Pacific Northwest, because it is a place of deep cultural roots. And, not to brag, but we definitely have the best American cuisine of anywhere else in the country. But at the same
You know that's
time,
right. Yes.
absolutely. New Orleans definitely has the just most delicious food I've ever had, and I've been all over the country now, and just nobody compares. They all want to be like New Orleans and Southern soul food and stuff like that. But yeah, it's kind of annoying because I've even encountered witches that like to say that they're Southern conjure tradition and everything. And then I'm like, oh, okay, well, where are you from? And they're like, oh, I'm from Maryland. And I'm like, I don't know if, but I don't want to try to like police people's identities. I just look a little askew at them, and I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna try to qualify who gets to say they're Southern and who doesn't. But I just feel like, for as much as people want to be very disparaging towards Southerners in the South, there is a lot of people here trying to appropriate Southern identity and Southern food and culture, and then try to use it for their own profit in the Pacific Northwest, and it's really annoying.
It's not exactly, it doesn't fit neatly into cultural appropriation for reason, but it hints of it. And I think when you are a witch from the South, and we know what the Deep South is, don't we? When you are from here, you already know that you're jostling around bones of, well, horrors. And that you have to accept that those land spirits are part of what you negotiate and give honor to. Like, so in a weird way, that sort of disparages that, the haunt, the haints, as we call them here, the haints of this place. If you're not walking with them, don't claim them.
Right.
That made any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh,
No,
absolutely.
it definitely does. And I mean, a big part of my personal story of my sojourn in the Northeast is projecting our problems onto the South. Like the South, that's where racism is. not the Northeast, right? And it's like, well, you're actually also a land that's built on genocide, or a culture built on genocide.
Yes.
Or the Pacific Northwest
Nice.
states, I feel like so often anywhere on this land, for the most part, has to grapple with white supremacy, and it's very easy for people to project that onto Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia and use that as a way of deflecting their own responsibility, their own growth, their own healing, and their own magic in a lot of ways, because healing is intimately connected with our magic and the way that we can work with the earth spirits and the ancestors of place. And yeah. So obviously not to sort of say the South is not without our problems, but I definitely feel like, we are the epicenter of some of the most intense horrors of the history of white colonization of this land. But we're also the home of the civil rights movement. And we're also an incredibly diverse region. And we're also, not to say that other regions aren't, but we are also, I think, still close to the land in a way that's powerful. And when I've lived outside of the South and I've come home and I've kind of had that really sharp contrast, what I often say is like the sky just hangs lower here. Like it feels different in some way that bleeds into my magic for sure.
Yeah.
I love that.
So for this episode, we wanted to talk about Samhain. And it's actually interesting because haunts are definitely something we talk a lot about since the veil between the world of the living and the dead is much thinner during Samhain. And correct me if I'm wrong, you have some Scorpio in your big three, right?
Yeah, my moon.
Oh, Scorpio moon. So that Scorpio energy of the deep resonance of legacy, of sex, of shame. This time of year is during the time of Scorpio. And so I wanted you first off to talk a little bit about what Samhain means to you and then how you celebrate and honor this time of year.
I thought about this all day. I all day. And then I did my own podcast, which is not released publicly yet. And I talked about this very thing. And okay, so what it means to me, I think a lot of people look at harvest, for instance, any harvest, as a final call, a final thing. I don't. I see harvest as a continued thing that I honor heavily at this time of the year. But okay, you know who Henry David Thoreau is, right? Okay. He wrote this beautiful essay, what was it? Autumnal Tints, Tints. And he spoke about the greatest harvest of all. And that great harvest was the falling leaves. And I get him in a way that I cannot express to you. I really wonder if he wasn't pagan. For me, there is, and he talked about this too, there is a magic, there is a harvest in decay. Decay, the slow rotting and falling apart. It is the most dear sacrifice we give, is this decay. And so a lot of my friends kind of look at harvest as, okay, I've got these pumpkins, I've got these beans, look at all I did this year. And I look at it more like, well, that too, of course. But also, what did need to pass away? What needed to go through the veil? What needed to do that to sustain not just me, but this land? My grandchildren, the witches I teach, what is that beautiful decay harvest that hits the ground that we don't think about. So I also think about my ancestors that way. After all, they have passed. They have, if you will, decayed. And what do we honor the most
Right.
at Samhain? What do we, right? What are we
Yeah.
honoring? Well, part of that, not just the wheel and the harvest, we're honoring our ancestors. And that beautiful harvest of all those leaves that have fallen to the ground and sunk in deep and become soil for something else to live, I don't think it's dead the way we think about death. And so I see harvest very much, especially as a steward of the earth, as Inku has pointed out. I see it as a moment to be reverent, not just about what I got, but what I let go and what I'm honoring that the earth and the cycles and the seasons and this land has let go. And I think by doing so, I stay more in the wheel. So that's what it means to me to, I don't like sectioning it off as just, oh, look what I got. You know, look at my big harvest. Aren't I wonderful? Such bullshit. I'm out of the wheel of the year. I'm out of nature. I'm not even honoring the land spirits when I do that. So it's complicated for me. And I hope that made any kind of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is definitely the time of composting what didn't work. You know, I got a lot of things that I was growing and that didn't work out very well. And so it's also the fungal time of the year. We go mushroom hunting, the
Well,
rains
praise
return,
the fungus.
play
Praise
praise the
her.
fungus.
Mycelium. Sorry.
Yes. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me because it is a time to revel in the decay. And to quote one of my favorite bands, you know, don't forget about dying. Don't forget about your friend death. Because this is the time of year that we honor what has died and maybe even what needed to die. And in ourselves or in our lives, and also honoring those who have died. And that's become a huge part of my Samhain ritual is, for one thing, putting on public rituals is exhausting. I don't have a lot of energy for it. When I was a younger witch and wanted to have every kind of ritual for every Sabbat, I was all about all of the different Sabbats of the year. But the one Sabbat that I always try to make sure we always do something for now is Beltane. And Samhain. Now Beltane is pretty fun. We have a maypole and we dance and it's a great time. But Samhain, it's always more somber because for one, it's a time where we invite the community to come out and participate, where we speak the name of our dead, and then we put something on the altar and we light a candle. And just that simple ritual every year has been so formative. It's such a powerful thing to just give people space. It's been hard to lead them because I've been moved to tears, and it's really hard to do public speaking when you're like ugly crying because somebody talked about losing their mom this past year. And yeah, it's a very emotional, very cathartic act. And so even though I'm tired, I'm working, I'm stressed out, I don't have a lot of funds or resources, I still make a point of prioritizing this time for my community because I know it's so important for
Yeah,
people.
Samhain is definitely the holiday where those messages have been the strongest for me. No doubt, sort of across time, the sort of visions that I still resonate with. I just hosted a Mabon service. I love Mabon. I helped to host a Ludnasa service recently. That's actually my favorite holiday if I'm going to be a bad pagan and not choose Samhain outside of Mardi Gras, of course. But no, Samhain is just power.
I was going to say that, like Inku said, I know it's blasphemy, but I also Mabon is my favorite Inku. So I know that's weird, but it really is. It's such a Thanksgiving. It's such a incredible time to revel in harvest. And it's also my favorite. We just had that with the community out here, and I can't have everybody in my coven. I still have a lot of witchy friends that need community, and we open that up to other witches. And it was just beautiful. It was just beautiful. And you know, Angel, you're also right that it's difficult sometimes to lead those things because, you know, we have hopefully empathy for people who are struggling or someone who's grieving. But I'm always just honored to be part of that. You know, the thing I did today, that podcast I did, I titled it about, you know, it's about harvest, right? Sometimes it ain't just apples, right? You know, we have to be okay with the harvest being messy.
Oh, but let's not throw the apples away. I do love the
Oh
apples.
no. We just make them into apple cider.
Yes.
Ooh, or spiced baked apples. That's been my specialty. Just throw all of the pumpkin spice and all of the herbs. Throw that shit in the oven. It's all you need, really.
Yeah,
It's all true. Yeah, it's all true. But you have a
yeah.
couple of other questions for me too, though.
Yes. So, what is? Well, I guess let's pick up with this one. What is something about this past turning of the wheel that you want to carry with you and to the new one? And then, what is something you want to leave behind?
Uh-oh. Okay.
Pour the tea. Pour the tea.
You know I'm gonna be honest, right? If you've listened to anything, you know I was abandoned suddenly in 2023. The land, my dogs, my kids, everybody. No explanation, never to hear from him again. And that was most probably the hardest thing and the most difficult journey I've ever gone through in my life. And also, what I'm about to say is not going to be popular. I hope you can give me space for that weird thing about my brain on the spectrum. Here we go. I'm not leaving behind shit. I'm taking the mess with me. I'm taking the lessons with me. I'm taking the rotted leaves with me and the funny, funky bones. I'm taking it all. I want to recycle it like the earth does. I want to see what lessons it had. I want to know how I can actually turn it into something my body and my soul can use. What am I taking with me? You know, a couple of scars. I'm limping a little. I'm still in a little bit of pain. But I'm also taking with me the recognition that here's the thing, y'all. Y'all know I'm turning 60 this coming April. Y'all met me when I was younger. I didn't know how strong I was. I had no idea how strong I was. And I
That's
don't,
right.
you know what I mean? And here's the thing. I wouldn't want to go through it again. Thank you very fucking much. I don't know if I can cuss, but I don't want to ever go through it again. But I see the value. I get it. I see the trauma. I see the rot. I see the blood and the bones on the ground. Did I learn something? Oh, yeah, I learned something. I learned that magic waits if you're in trauma. It just softly envelops you and waits, unlike other dogmatic traditions. I learned that I can be messy. I learned that I can be grieving and still revere the moon and my goddess. I learned that the friends that I'd given so much time to and invested all that love in, damn, if they weren't resilient too, look at them. They stood there while I was sobbing and snotting up. I learned too much to leave it behind. I leave not a damn thing do I leave behind. It's all going with me, maybe in a different shape.
Like composting that which does not serve and transmuting it. Yeah, I can vibe with that because, anytime I've had to end either a friendship or a relationship, and it's been very painful at the same time, it was like, oh, I see now why this wasn't serving me, why this had to end, why I will never let anyone treat me like this again. And luckily, this year has been a lot more stable for me than last year. Last year was a lot of upheaval and change. But yeah, when you can come through a situation that breaks you down to the very marrow, and then you find your way back up, it is empowering. And absolutely, I would not want to go through those things again. And I totally understand where you're coming from with what you went through. But at the same time, it's like, all right, I've survived this, and now I'm going to thrive just despite the people that thought that they were going to see this destroy me.
Well, and I think it's really specific also that all of this is congealing for me right now because here comes Samhain, right, y'all? Here comes Samhain. And
Here
I
she comes. That's right.
hear that beautiful baby comes. And my thought process is, I want to make my ancestors proud. The story doesn't end with some asshattery I experienced. He couldn't take that away from me. They wait for me in any shape I come to them, as long as it's in love. And so I did not lose everything. And Samhain, that harvest, that one, knowing that, that's a big one for me.
Comes to mind for me is like, how much did our ancestors go through? How much did they live through? How much did they succumb to that they've been waiting for me to meet that challenge and rise above it?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I'm a dude, but my ancestors are of a wide variety of genders and identities that I'll never know because it's been flattened into the binary as far as the stories go. And I know that there were some of them who were queer, and I know that there were some of them who were what would be have been considered deviant at the time, and they did the best with what they could do. And now they're watching what I do with that, you know, at not only as a queer person, but just as a person who is not in the dominant position. And even if on one hand, you know, sometimes I feel like, well, they were missionary Baptist down in Mississippi. It's like, but I can feel in me that there's more to that story, you
Yeah.
know? Even if they were white supremacists on the surface, and like that's part of my struggle to grapple with in my relationship with them, I can feel that there's more than that surface. And I can feel that there's like the violators and the violated that sort of that still runs through me and runs in this land. And Samhain is the time for that. Samhain is the time to sit
Yeah.
with that.
Anku, as you were talking, I don't know if y'all know Byron Ballard, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, really cool doing the hard work up there on, in Appalachia. But Byron has this whole take, and I'm just, as you were talking, Inko, I kept thinking about it, on when we're revering our ancestors, we often cringe at some of the things they may have done or who they may have been. But I, well, she also doesn't believe that, once you pass over, there are a lot of things you can see and understand. Her
That's
contention,
right.
and her contention has always been those that had the most to repair. Those are the ones who are doing the hardest work for us today. Let them do it. Let them do it. They need to repair. And we need to learn the lessons from whatever their lives were. So I don't separate them. I've heard people say, I only want my good ancestors to answer. No, I am a whole tree. I'm not carving off branches of my life, my experience. I am whole. And sometimes it's messy, and sometimes it's even horrific, and sometimes it's beautiful, but I am a whole. And so, yeah, I just wanted to share that with you because I thought it was a really cool idea that those ancestors are the ones who have the most to do the work for.
Thank you for that. That's something I want to dig into more. Yeah, I appreciate that.
And also, our work as witches at this time is, and what we know is to heal our ancestral lines. And our Samhain episode, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, was actually on ancestral healing, where we talked about how when you heal your ancestral line, the therapist who I was referencing was Christian, but what he described doing was essentially ancestor veneration. You learn the truth of what your ancestors did, whether it's, your ancestors were the victimizers or the victims. And the victims, if you are the descendant of victimizers, the victims become part of your family connections. And so you
That's
honor
exactly
those.
right. Yeah.
And you would, in
Yeah.
that episode, you talked about honoring the enslaved people that your ancestors had forced into servitude. So that becomes part of the story of the ancestors. And I think that's important to understand, is that human life is messy, it's complex. And the more that we both honor the truth of what our ancestors faced or what they perpetrated, the more that we can heal our ancestral lines. And then that, of course, has the scientific ramifications of healing our own ancestral lines.
I really want to highlight the social responsibility that comes with that as well, so it doesn't get too psychological or individualistic and like undermining and ripping apart white supremacy in daily life as much as one can. Is inseparable from that. And I feel like it's almost a litmus test for that more internal psychological and even sort of spiritual work. That, like, it's not just coming to the terms with the fact that many of us who have European ancestry, which includes people that identify as lots of different races today, but if we're like thinking ancestry in a very biological way, like m very many of us have racial terrorists in our lineage. And if we have men in our lineage, we have enough male ancestors, no matter what our gender is in this incarnation, that like a certain percent of them are abusers. And that's part of us. And we also have a lot of ancestors, mainly women, but we're also cross-gender experiences who were victims. So like the tension is inside us. It's not just for me, at least like the way that I think of this and try to let my heart guide me into this is I have and am both, at least on that side. And it's not an easy path. It's not one that I feel like we have a lot of scripts for, you know?
I was just going to say, I think that specifically Southern witchcraft is knowing that these bones rattle with us. that we give that veneration to them as well is very specifically Southern, whether or not it should be. I know it resonates with me that I need to remember this. And I don't know. I just feel like if there's something Southern about my craft, it is that we are haunted. And I think we think about haunts as being something separate from us. It's over in the house over there. It's at this site over here, the slave graveyard. It's over there. It's no. Specifically for Southern witches, we are haunted. We carry the haints within us, which makes Samhain an incredible opportunity to honor them. If that made, and do you agree though, Ingu and Angel?
No, I definitely do, and I would maybe just sort of like slightly veer off course from that to say perhaps we're especially aware of how haunted we are. That
Yes.
if it's the recency of civil war in our region or slavery and segregation and genocide. In actuality, for me, that is the power of us being in the region of the civil rights movement that kept those legacies alive. How fucking privileged are we to be in the region where mass movements of people stood up for their humanity and said, we are going to have this history and we have a responsibility across the board, but especially here to keep those ancestors in our thoughts and hearts, you know?
Exactly, which is why erasure of our history, no matter how shameful it might be, is just not going to work out. We have to remember why they died. We have to remember why any peoples on this land suffered. We must remember. We must carry it with us. And erasing that, you might as well erase all the magic of this land.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
on the other side, it's also, how we remember. Here in Georgia right now, we're actually, I might not be totally caught up on the most recent developments in the case, but there is has been a through by the Confederate Sons of America against the Stone Mountain Monument. Now, the Stone Mountain Monument, for those of y'all outside of Georgia, Atlanta area, is where the KKK was founded by Nathan Forrest Bedford or whatever the fuck his name was. And I mean, the county I was born in was named after him. It's Forrest with two R's, which is how you can tell that it's just really blatant white supremacy. But yeah, so Stone Mountain has this monument to General Lee and the Confederate generals. And the National Park Service just tried to put up a plaque being like, hey, this is kind of problematic. And they're being sued by the Confederate Sons of America or whatever, again, the fuck their name is, because it doesn't honor their ancestors. And just like, no, just fuck y'all is really where
Actually,
I come down on that.
I think it's honoring their ancestors perfectly.
You know, that's right. That's right. I think if their ancestors most likely would like for the record to be corrected in the side of just love and basic human decency.
Is who we
It
were.
gets
This
me.
is what we did.
This is it. This,
Yeah.
y'all.
That's one of the tools of white supremacy, is this revisionist idea of history to keep people from really understanding and knowing the truth of what was perpetrated against people of color. And you see this, what's going on right now with there being the executive branch trying to go into every little museum across the country and basically rewrite it for within a white supremacist lens that erases the suffering of indigenous and black and enslaved people. And so that's one of the ways that we have to push back, is both taking the good and the bad of the ancestors and knowing the truth, because in the scientific research, if you don't know the truth of what happened to your ancestors, then you will be subject to suffering that you don't even understand. And that was something you saw on the Holocaust survivors. Oftentimes, they didn't even know that they were from a lineage of Holocaust survivors because it was hidden from them. And then they were manifesting all this really deep suicidal ideation and depression, not even knowing why until they found out that they were descended from this massive trauma. And that's also one of our theories on the podcast about why things are haunted, because what haunting is trying to do is show the energy, the trauma that has been unleashed on this land. You know, we talked about the stone tape theory with Nicholas and the episode I just put out. And yeah, I think that when you have human suffering and human cruelty, it imprints itself both on the DNA of both the perpetrator and the person, the victim. And then it has an energetic resonance in the space where we see the haunting.
Quick reminder of a related concept, not to go into depth in, but I think we mentioned in the Nicholas Pearson episode, and he's the dreamiest, that like epigenetics could be a big way, or at least like a really fruitful avenue to explore this issue of like social experience and how it doesn't necessarily change our DNA, but it changes the instruction booklet on how our DNA expresses itself. And therefore, DNA is very important. And also, it's like half of the story that we've focused a lot of attention on. But the social and physical safety and the history of the limbic system is much stretchier than the history of the prefrontal cortex, like.
I just wanted to jump in these waters with you because we are talking about epigenetics and how trauma is stored in the body. We all know about this. Science is clear, right? My thinking here is, well, I always say everything is everything when it comes to the craft. So we're talking about land, sites of injury, sites of horrors, right? I believe, and I can't imagine a scientist would argue with me too very long on it, that a site could also have memory, just like our bodies do, a body of water, a body of land, a field of trees could remember horrible injuries and transgressions. And I do believe it holds trauma too. I don't know if I should talk about this, but I'm almost done with a book that I'm writing. It's Witch Folk, an Ecology, and I'm almost done with it. And it's about how when I work on, we're going to call it my land. Okay, whatever. That's just for the tax office, right? So my land, which is really their land that I'm able to be here. Before I do anything, before I do a burial site for a beloved dog, before I venerate my ancestors, before I create something new, an altar, before I do anything, I honor the land spirits and the land here. I honor this place, this haunted, slow, beautiful place. And I ask them what they want. And we're all witches here, right? The conversation is deeper for us because what, how does that inform our craft? How does it matter to our craft what we're saying about sites of injury and epigenetics and what has come before? How do we operate from an injured site? And as Southerners, right? You feel me? So I wanted to throw that out there.
My partner, he had an experience last year that somehow awakened this latent mediumship in him. And so far, it's been traumatic for him because dating me has actually been probably, I was probably the best person for him to have experienced this sudden ability to see spirits and ghosts, because I feel like if he had been around other people that weren't like witchy and into the what we like to say the woo, they would have probably said that, oh, you're having some kind of schizophrenic break and you need to go get highly medicated, which is, you know, a completely other conversation. But like one of the things that when he first moved into his new place was he encountered an angry land spirit. And I don't have that kind of mediumship ability where I can see spirits, but I know what he's experiencing because I can feel like the physiological, even like sense some of the differences and subtle things about the energy shifts. I just don't see them as vividly as he does. But yeah, he encountered an angry land spirit when he first moved into this place. And so I had to be like, all right, let me look up what I know about land spirits, like who are some of the good witchy authors that I trust to know about how we can appease them, and as well as also using my witchy intuition. And since we, you know, did some things to build wards and also like make offerings, the land spirit hasn't been appearing to him, but he has been experiencing where we'll go. We were staying at a hot springs, and he went outside and he encountered a spirit, and it freaked him out because he comes back to me and he's just like, I saw something. And I was like, please don't tell me till the morning, because even though I can't see them, you're like fear is it's freaking me out right now. So in the morning he told me what he experienced. And yeah, it's interesting because he is the one experiencing this sort of mediumship, but I'm kind of helping guide him with what I know about witchcraft and spirits and stuff. But I guess you know, tying this all into what you were saying is we as witches, being a witch, I feel like is understanding that there is this bigger world out there, and like knowing that you stand in your power and that you do have the ability to both invoke the power and also banish it if it needs to be banished. And taking on that responsibility as a witch is, it can be very daunting at times.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, because it's not all, you know, it's not all witch talk, people. The real work is work, right? And I, you know, we're all sitting here and I think we're all educated. And in some way, I know you did a lot of work with mycelium. I know Inku is also a teacher. I'm a teacher. And one of the things I say to people when they move on to a land and they're like, what is going on here? I'm getting anger and I'm such a cool person. Like, why would they be, you know, what's going on? Like, I just wanted to be cool. And I always say, did you take the time to research? Research the geology, research the history, research whatever you can. Honor it that much that you concern yourself with the lives that were before. Because we, I think we take a colonizing, not we, you and I and Inku, but like the world takes such a colonizing view of a place when we move in or visit. And we're visitors ourselves. And it's, you know, what is the work we've done to understand where we are? That is the bare minimum of respect for me as a, the bare minimum.
I'll take a slightly different tact and say that for me, it's not only colonizing, it's commodifying, right? So when we receive a commodity, that's when its history starts in our imagination. We don't think about the hands of the child laborers and highly exploited and highly abused people and resources and land spirits that go into the cell phones that we're recording this episode on right now. You know, we're sort of taught not to think about that. But I think from a sort of an animist, pagan, witchy, shamanistic, any sort of more connected spirituality, like they're with us, they're shaping it. And it's not easy to be in relationship with that in like a really
Right.
explicit way. We're really trained to do everything but that.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a really great point. And, as a steward of my farm, one of the things I've been very concerned about, and it still matters to me today, no matter how old I get, is that I am not over this. When I tried to be over, and I did try, by the way, I'm not some kind of puritanical witch. I have fucked up, y'all. When I tried to be over it, when I tried to landscape it, when I tried to bend it to my will, I got nothing magical out of it. When I stopped that and I started flowing with this ecology and letting it tell me, hey, not over there, or hey, wouldn't it be cool if over here? Everything right now, we are a protected habitat in the state of Alabama. We have rare breeds now of all kinds of things that, the university comes out and studies. And they always ask me, how are you doing that? What are you doing, little crazy witch in the woods? And you know what I'm doing? Listening. I'm getting the hell out of the way. And I'm letting, well, I don't like the word letting. I'm asking them to allow me to be part of them. I love to say that when I got here, I was really proud of my trees. And it took me a long time, but where I am today is a way better place. They're really proud of me now.
Hell
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. God, this is a good conversation, y'all.
It is.
Seba, what kind of trees are you in relationship right now? Who are you saying hi to? Who's saying hi to you?
Okay, now Inka, you've met me and you know I love a damn tree. So
Yeah, I do.
it's a situation, right? So I'm apparently poly when it comes to
Brahma, are
this.
you Polly? You are Polly.
Asking me to pick one, how cute. Okay, so here's the thing. I've always loved me an oak tree, and I've got a 300-year-old oak. You've seen it.
Oh my God, yes.
Takes seven people to hug it. But he's done. We've had somebody out here that, it's been confirmed he's passed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is
Right
there any
now,
green left on him, or is he
there's a
gone the other way?
little. There's a little green left, but he's 65 foot tall, and if he falls, he's gonna kill a lot of people.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, that's how it goes
And
sometimes.
as Angel knows, there are certain mycelium that take over the roots and showcase, hey, guess what? We're in decay, and they have taken over. I've spent many a night
Do
crying
you
on
have
it.
some lingxi? Is it lingxi out there? Is it like
Yeah,
the
it's. I forget the name, but they came out when they diagnosed him. They pointed at it and they said, "Ooh, looking good, girl." And that root of that grandfather oak is all over this property. It's huge. But he made a son or a daughter, I don't know, ungendered. And that young oak is fantastic. And it popped up, y'all gonna love this, behind my altar, my outside altar, which we sat and did a reading on Angel. And that oak is now showing themselves. But honestly, I'm glad you asked this because where I'm in relationship right now is really with my cedar. I'm
Oh, I
really
do love a cedar. Oh my gosh.
don't you love a cedar? And she, I feel like it's a she, and I hate to gender her, but she feels that way. She whispers that way at me. She promises to watch over in the dark of the winter, and she's just so protective. And I've been gathering some of her little fallen boughs and making burn sticks out of those, and just to, I don't know, it's always about the trees for me. I couldn't possibly pick just one Inco.
Oh, I'm right there with you. So no doubt. And I also kind of gender trees, but I will say I gender trees in a pretty queer way. Like if there's a scale from 1 to 100 on the masks to femmes scale, a tree could really be anywhere on there. You know, some of them are definitely in the 45 to 65 range and are pretty fluid or agender, but some of them are mask and some of them are femme. And I mean, bald cypress is pretty much always mask to me. Magnolias are often masculine, but then I have my mimosas, and I have a mama mimosa who is very femme, and then I have a mimosa on the other side of the yard who's kind of like her younger nephew, who's very masculine, and it's fine, you know.
Okay, I don't feel so crazy now. So
No, with me, like oaks, I've had like super masculine, big Dagda energy oaks, and I've had some super femme Bridget energy oaks.
you know what? I've got to tell you, all of a sudden I know my favorite tree and the one I'm the most into because of this conversation. So,
Oh, tell me, girl.
baby, I got to tell you. So, my beautiful, oh my gosh, my mulberry trees, okay, on this property. I didn't
Oh,
know
all
whether,
right.
no, I got to give you this because it's about gender. Hold on to the phone, honey. Mulberry trees, you know, I'm thinking about the completely excuse me, completely arbitrary podcast right now because
Oh,
after
yeah.
y'all interviewed them, I just stuck with them forever. I listened to them today. Love them. But my mulberry trees, y'all. So I didn't know what was happening. And I really wanted a female on the property because the female, and they are those things to make the little berries and stuff. Was over on my neighbor's and I wished for one so much, but I never got one. I got a male and it popped up in the middle of my property next to the dying oak. And I see you, oak. I know what you're doing. You're giving your spot. I get you. And then I had an arborist come out here because it started acting different. And the flowers were looking different and the fruit was looking different. I'm like, what is going on with my male mulberry? And he giggled because apparently mulberries will change gender depending on what is needed and the survival of the species. So I have the most delicious and most beloved, and I will take care of it all of my living life, trans tree.
I love that.
And she's just being her real self, y'all. And that is my
Love
favorite tree.
that. I love that. That is great. You gotta protect our trans trees here. Very
We will.
important.
We will.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite little like botany quirks is when I learned that trees that have both male and female, according to the botany designation traits, are like perfect trees. They're the perfect plants because they can just do what they need to do.
Right,
And just
depending
felt kind of
on
nice.
the environmental stressors, a tree can become more masculine or feminine, depending on like
Right.
junipers. Junipers do that. Yeah,
Even
and
chickens can do that. Like,
I
if you
have had
have,
it. Yep.
have you
Yep.
had that? Have you had
Yes.
chickens change gender
Yes.
designation, Saba? Tell us.
Yes, I have. I have the university out here to look at her. She was crowing, was absolutely DNA. They even wanted to take DNA because they couldn't believe it. Crowing, riding everybody. But I got another rooster, and that rooster was very toxic masculinity rooster. And he was doing his job. And that one switched and began to lay eggs in her second year of life.
Whoa.
Betty got her groove back, huh? She stepped into the masculine for a minute and then she was like, all right, let's reproduce some more. Is that kind of how it went?
Yeah, now I want to rename her Stella so that she could get her groove back. But yes. But also, I'd just like to point out that, in this horrible time, and I think we all agree politically, let's not go too deep in it, but let me just say, it is such a reprieve to run into the woods and to run into nature and know, hey, we give no truck to the patriarchy here. We don't give a shit about capitalism, and in fact, we don't like it. It is such a reprieve to go back to, well, y'all know I call it the Great Mother, and just be done with all of that, because real life, actual life, DNA, scientific life has nothing to do with that shit.
Yeah,
So.
absolutely. And in fact, patriarchy, I feel, is a malignant virus that is
Yes.
keeping our species from really, I'm gonna get a little woo on you, but keeping us
Yes.
from joining the galactic community. So that's why we got to destroy the patriarchy with our witchcraft.
Hey, save a chicken, fry the patriarchy, y'all.
Yeah. Well, y'all, we've
Get
already been
it.
talking for over an hour.
Oh, we
So,
did. Yeah.
yes, we did. I wanted to bring this back around to both our topic and bring us to a close. I wanted to ask you for the sort of the last few minutes is first how you will be celebrating Samhain for those who might be curious, and then if you could let us know like what you are bringing into this new wheel of the year that will be starting once we are past the Samhain time that you want our listeners to hear about. So.
Well, it's simple. I'm going to answer you literally. I grow native pumpkins. And what we do, I have a little coven, you know that. All women except for my son, little matriarchy over here. And I'm going to roast all of those six pumpkins. And then I make a pumpkin soup. And everything is from a coalition of the witches. So, what did you grow? Let's put it in here. Did you grow chives? Did you grow parsley? And then we have that dinner first. Because I've noticed over the years, we're not Christians. We don't have to bless anything first. And it's this idea that we're sharing food and sustenance before we go out there and do the work. So, we do that. And then we go outside, and everyone brings something of their ancestors and puts it on the table. And then we all have candles and do a little ritual. But one by one, we walk up to light a candle and say the name of an ancestor if we know it. And if we don't, what we want to believe was our ancestor. Or what we do feel in our witchy bones. And when that's done, we all share a story. I've seen people do this. I know it may seem irreverent, who haven't had an ancestor pass, but had a beloved dog pass and want to speak to the dead. And they told stories of, whoever, Stanley, the chicken, or Herbert the dog, because it's all about that beautiful, as I've said, that harvest of decay. Understanding that it's all coming back somehow, some way, feeding us, much the way that mycelium does, Angel, much that way.
Yes, absolutely. And then what about this new turning of the wheel? What are you working on? You mentioned a book. Can you give us a little bit of details and also what you're going to be bringing into this new year?
Absolutely. Okay. So the book was going to be released that very year that I got abandoned. So I had to do a lot of healing, and it was primarily done, but I couldn't go back to it. Over the last year, I've been working really hard on it. My editor's very proud of it. She's also a witch. I needed this year, I needed, witch and trauma is a mess, right? And I needed to go through that to find the last chapter. So my book, which is called Farmcraft, An Ecology of Witch Folk is coming out, although she wanted it to be, by Yule. It's coming out roughly around the spring. And that is something I am bringing with me. That has been, I don't know, 2 decades of learning, and letting that baby go out into the wild is a big deal. The other thing I'm bringing with me, just real quickly, would be, I'm a crone now. I've accepted that. I've gone through a croning ritual. I am a grandma, which is shocking as a Gen Xer. Rock and roll forever, baby. I'm bringing with me the acceptance of my wrinkles. I'm bringing with me, I've never had it before, carrying it with me, the lessons I've learned to get here. I want to walk into my witch's new year in full acceptance of this stage. I don't want to fight it anymore. I want to play in it. I want to make a mess in it. And I want to 100% embrace it. So I'm bringing all that with me. No holds barred.
That's beautiful. Awesome. Well, Seba, thank you so much for coming on to talk to us and be our official guest for this Samhain. I really appreciate you, and I'm hoping that with this release of this episode, you'll get more listeners for your podcast, for those who aren't already listening. And also, I look forward to your book. I'm really excited about seeing that out in the world. So, yeah, just keep us informed, and I'd love to circle back with you when it comes out so we can talk about it, especially around springtime when we're all getting ready to start up our gardens. So,
I will give you the first interview on that book.
awesome.
And
Awesome.
also, I just wanted to say thank you both so much. I know he's had to leave the building, but thank you both so much because it meant a lot to me after all these years to come back together like this. And I hope I do.
Yes.
I hope I did it justice as your Samhain episode.
Yes,
Happy,
absolutely.
happy harvest, my friend.
Happy harvest. Thank you so much to Seba for coming on to our show and sharing with us her lyrical and messy truth. And we will be bringing her back on the show to celebrate the publication of her first book, due out in 2026. Now that we are in November, we are gearing up for our live show, The Trans Telethon, a benefit for the Rainbow Railroad, taking place November 20th, 2025, from 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. PST at the Sparrow and Serpent Pub in Eugene, Oregon. This year will feature comedic stylings of some very talented trans comics and performances by drag performers, and will be hosted by Sarah Levy, with music by our own lovely Ruby. If you can't be there in person, we are once again streaming it live from our Twitch account, which you can get to at transtelethon.twitch.com. We are hoping to make this event our most successful one yet, and we are seeking to raise donations to help cover the administrative costs of the show. If you would like to donate to help us pay our hardworking performers and videographer, we currently have a Ko-fi campaign at ko/fi.com transtelethon. And if you would like your donations to go directly to Rainbow Railroad, check out our website to donate directly to on the link on the live stream. We hope to see you there, either in person or via our live stream. Now it's time to talk about Patreon, our current means of soliciting monetary support to help us keep this podcast going. At our supporter level for only $1 a month, you will get early access to ad-free episodes of the podcast one day before it hits the main RSS feed. You also get access to bonus Patreon-only episodes that I don't share outside of our supporter circles. I am currently writing and recording an episode of Who's in Bloom on Datura and an episode of Tripping Through the Tarot about the High Priestess. These episodes delve a little deeper into sensitive topics, and I also get a little bit more personal than I'm comfortable with sharing on the main RSS feed. At this level, I also exclusively post my videos from my yoga practice. I'm currently teaching a yoga series based around the tarot and also teaching yoga in Espanol. I will also be posting recipes and spells at this level for those interested in infusing some magic into the holidays, and all of this is available for only $1 a month. At the $5 a month level, you will get mail. I finally got the Athena stickers printed and some vinyl stickers with the Science Witch podcast logo that will be perfect for your car, broom, or other transportation. I sent out a big mail out in September, so if I have your address, be on the lookout for more mail. If you have signed up for this tier and did not get mail, I don't have your address, so be sure to DM me via Patreon or email me your address. For those of you who want a sticker but don't want to pay a monthly subscription, we are currently in the process of migrating our sticker shop off of Etsy to a new, yet to be determined platform. I lost access to the Etsy site after someone bought a sticker last month, and it turns out there's no way to call Etsy support. I started an email exchange with Etsy support, and somehow I ended up in an email exchange with another user with Etsy support wanting me to divulge personal information to access my account. After several attempts where I was, for some reason, seeing these emails from another user, I decided Etsy does not protect my personal information, and for lots of other reasons, it's time to find another online shop for the stickers. Of course, you can still directly request them from me, and I can send them to you, but for now, the only way to get the stickers is through our sticker exchange on Patreon or to meet us in person. For those of you who are in the Pacific Northwest, I will be attending Dyer Brook for the third year in a row with my partner, Puppy, and we will be hosting panels and giving away stickers. If you would like to meet up with us in person, check out Dyer Brook at the PDX Sheraton Hotel, November 14th through the 16th. Finally, at our highest level of support, the Science Witch Coven, I am offering 30-minute tarot and birth chart readings over Zoom for our supporters at this level. So far, I have not had anybody reach out to book readings, so I'm looking to change things up and am seeking input from our supporters as to what you would like to see from this level of support. In the past, I had thought about offering Patreon-exclusive hangouts or Zoom sessions, but right now, trying to offer all the perks for Patreon largely on my own is a lot. So I'm still trying to figure out how to best compensate our supporters at this level for now. However, if you would like a birth chart reading or a tarot reading, please reach out. I can do them over Zoom, or I can send you notes if you'd rather just have a document on of the reading rather than doing a Zoom meeting. And of course, just listening and sharing the podcast is by far the best way to support us and spread our Science Witch agenda. If you are seeking community with our fellow queerdos, check out our Discord server. You can find us over on social media at Science Witch Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, and Science Witch Pod on Blue Sky. For transcripts and show notes, check out our website at www.sciencewitchpodcast.com. And finally, for those of y'all who hate social media, you can always email us at questions@sciencewitchpodcast.com. Until next time, live long and prosper and blessed be, and happy Samhain. Thank you.